Brett Hollander back here on WBAL with a very special guest as we look back 75 years ago to what happened at Yankee Stadium with Lou Gehrig giving his famous Luckiest Man speech, and a guy who probably knows as much about it as anybody, a guy who wrote a book called Luckiest Man, The Life and Death of Lou Gehrig back in 05. Jonathan Eig, author, joins us. And Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Jonathan, looking at some of your work, and you wrote a very, very famous Jackie Robinson biography. You wrote one also about Al Capone. You've been in several documentaries, and you wrote this Gehrig one. What compelled you, let's start here, to write about Gehrig? Because I find him to be, as someone who loves sports and American history, and when those two come together, to be one of the more fascinating characters in the history of American sports.
Yeah, Gehrig fascinated me too. I always felt like I knew he was a great ball player, but I didn't know much about him off the field. And I think in some ways he's actually underrated as a ball player. He may be, one of the two or three greatest hitters of all time, but that gets lost in the fact that people, just associate him with this illness, with ALS. And I wondered, what he was really like, because he was so shy and so quiet throughout his career. He was always playing in the shadow of Babe Ruth. I wondered what kind of a man he really was, and I wondered how he dealt with that illness. We this great saying that he felt like the luckiest man on the face of the earth, and then we don't know anything about what happened after that. So I was just really curious to see what made the guy tick and whether he was as kind and as strong as he seemed from all of the images that I'd had.
It's funny when you put it into YouTube, which you can do right now, and unless you really dig, and I tried earlier this week to find a longer version of the speech, you really only get what everyone knows. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. Maybe you get something a little more than that, and you see Gehrig, and that's the clip that everyone knows. And what else was said that day? I know you wrote about that recently.
Yeah, I wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal last week about it because it's frustrating. We only have four sentences preserved on film or on audio. And the rest of the speech from my book, I had to piece it together, patching it together from newspaper reports. I looked at all the different newspapers that covered the speech that day, and I tried to find quotes that matched where people reported it the same way twice. And I tried to find quotes that matched the audio. And I put together what I think is the best version we can come up with on the speech. But I'm hoping someday we'll find the rest of that of the film, because it is frustrating. But we know that Gehrig went on to say he felt lucky because not because he had this disease, obviously, but because he had lived such a great life and he was choosing to embrace optimism and embrace life rather than death. And he said he was lucky to have played for the Yankees and to have had such wonderful teammates and to have had some success on the field. He was lucky to have wonderful family, a wife and parents who loved him. He was lucky to have these groundskeepers, the managers. He thanked everybody and just said that, you may have heard that I got this bad break, he said, but I feel like I've got an awful lot to live for. And that such inspiring words that it really, to this day, continues to inspire me, because he was able to embrace life and not the darkness that they had for him.
Yeah, mind you, he's 36 years old when this happens, as so many people who are stricken with this horrible disease. The year before, 35, maybe not the player he was a few years before, but still at 29 home runs. So, he had a lot more home runs and base hits theoretically left in him before this disease really took over his body. What, Jonathan, did he know medically? Did he know he was given a death sentence? What did they know then?
Yeah, they knew that ALS was a death sentence, and they knew that people typically lived just about 2 years with it, and that's exactly what he got, was 2 years from the time of diagnosis. The doctors were trying to give him some false hope. They were telling him that there were studies and there were experiments underway and there was a chance he might beat this, but as his body began to deteriorate, he knew. And, in my research, I found letters that he wrote to his doctor as he was dying, letters that nobody had ever seen before. In fact, they were owned by a collector right there in Baltimore. And they really showed the courage that Gehrig maintained. He knew what he was facing, and he just decided he was going to deal with it as best he could. And he actually retired from baseball and took a job as a parole commissioner in the city of New York. He became a civil servant.
Amazing.
Because he wanted to make the most of whatever time he had left.
This speech, and I know you touched on this, it's authentically him. There was no speechwriter. There was no PR help. I'm sure he had no concept of how famous that speech would become, but this was truly Gehrig's thoughts and feelings on that day in Yankee Stadium?
Yeah, it sure looks that way. We don't know if it was spontaneous. My guess is, knowing Gehrig, that he had thought about it a little bit, what he wanted to say. He maybe rehearsed it the night before, but he didn't write anything out. There were no notes. And his wife later said that she had helped him come up with it, but that but if that's true, that there was nothing written that they'd saved. And my guess is that he gave some thought to what he wanted to say, because the structure of the speech is so lovely. You know, begins with the luckiest man phrase and ends with lucky. And he remembers everybody he wants to thank. So, but he had no help from the PR department. He had no help from the marketing team. This was all Lou Gehrig.
Jonathan Eig, the author of the book Luckiest Man, looking back at what happened about 75 years ago at Yankee Stadium. The next day, Jonathan, in the newspapers, in New York City, the buzz, did people have any concept of that speech then and how memorable and momentous it was?
Well, you know, the newspaper reporters who were covering the game that day, they said that it was astonishing that Gehrig had been so shy and so he'd avoided the press all his career. And when he made the speech, they said, wow, we really missed the strength of this man's character. All these years we had taken him for granted. So it made an immediate impression. And then it went out over the newsreels, and people saw it in movie theaters, and that made another impression and really helped spread it across the country. And then, of course, you know, Gary Cooper starred in the movie Pride of the Yankees, and the speech is a part of that film, although they changed it a little bit. And that helped bring it to an even wider audience. So little by little, I think the importance of the speech began to grow.
I was going to ask you next about Pride of the Yankees, and this is a movie that won a lot of awards in its time. What do you think about that movie, and does it do the man justice? Does it do that moment justice? The movie, if I recall correctly, Jonathan, kind of ends with the speech.
It does. He makes the speech, he walks in the dugout, and then they roll the credits.
Right.
I'm going to get a lot of grief from your listeners for saying this, but I don't like the movie. I know it's a beloved movie. I know it's shown on TV all the time, and baseball fans kind of cherish it. And I just feel like it doesn't treat Gehrig the way he should be treated. It makes him too wimpy, and it makes his wife the real hero of the story. And Gehrig was the true hero. I think that they had to do some things to make it work for Hollywood, and they wanted to attract women to the theaters because it was World War II and the men were all off fighting. So they inserted a lot of mushy gushy stuff, including a dance number. So it's not my favorite movie.
Let's take a step back and look at Gehrig, the person, before this diagnosis and really the end of his career at the age of 36. First of all, here in Baltimore, we feel, at least I do, kind of forever linked to Gehrig because of Cal Ripken and the streak. And that was such a buildup. And I felt that Gehrig was such a worthy person for Cal to try and chase down in that way. But I would say both men really embraced the streak. Is that a fair thing to say? Gehrig was, I don't want to use the word obsessed, but he cared deeply about the idea of showing up to work every day and being in the lineup.
That's right. He was a little bit obsessed with it, and I'll tell you why. He always played in Babe Ruth's shadow, and he didn't really care that the Babe got all the attention. But there was this one thing that he did that the Babe could never do, and that was, you know, show up for work and be healthy every day. You know, Babe would have to miss some games when he had hangovers or when he was sick to the stomach from drinking too much. Perhaps when he had some other diseases,
sure.
That we won't mention. But Gehrig was just so proud of the fact that he could be counted on. You know, so that German personality, perhaps, but also just the fact that he was not a natural athlete the way Ruth was. He's somebody who had to work hard to make it work. And I think he was incredibly proud of the streak. And there were a couple of times during the streak where he, you know, he was really too sick to play, and he would go in for one inning. It didn't happen often. But he knew it really mattered to him to keep that thing going. I think he would have very much admired Cal Ripken. They seem like kindred spirits to me.
Yeah, I think Cal had so many of those same sentiments that he could be counted on by his teammates every day to be in the lineup. Of course, over the course of 2,632 consecutive games for Cal, there were many twisted ankles, days he didn't feel great. I'm sure had a fever or two over the course of that streak for Cal Ripken. Such fascinating guys that will always be linked together. And then I guess finally, the man, Gehrig, you're talking about a guy, as you just mentioned, who didn't come as naturally maybe compared to Ruth. He did play for the most famous franchise in the history of pro sports, so he had that star power with him. They won a lot there with the Yankees. But he went to Columbia. He's the son of German immigrants, and they're kind of like a self-made story, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, very poor. His parents lost three children. He was the only one who survived. and was always a mama's boy because of that. Just always felt like he had to take care of his mother and never disappoint her. Came from nothing, went to college on a scholarship, picked Columbia, even though, you know, his mother was working as a maid there. He wanted to be around to help her. Just a very humble, modest guy, and you know, never fought over his contracts. Always just took what the Yankees gave him. Never got in any controversies. A real gentleman and a real salt of the earth guy.
The legacy of the speech 75 years ago is what, Jonathan?
You know, I think the legacy is the message that it sends to anybody who's dealing with hardship. That, you know, Gehrig said he felt lucky because of the life he had, and he was going to think about that, not about his illness. And I think he's a symbol of strength for anybody who's dealing with hardship, certainly for people today who are dealing with ALS. It's great that this disease of weakness is associated with such a strong man.
Amazing story from 75 years ago. I have to say baseball is doing a great job in going back and honoring this pretty much only the way they can, and that sport does. So it's very deserving for Lou Gehrig. The luckiest man, the life and death of Lou Gehrig, from Jonathan Eich. Jonathan, very gracious and nice of you to join us here today, looking back at the Iron Horse, Lou Gehrig.
Thanks for having me on.
That's Jonathan Eich. We'll come back with more next here on WBAL.